Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. The fires we feared are here. The dry winter set the stage, and now it's burning. From the western slope, where three firefighters died, to the high country, where a wildfire threatens Leadville, to southern Colorado, where whole towns southwest of Pueblo are evacuated. Those three firefighters died. Two more were injured. And the largest fire burning in Colorado right now, the Snyder Fire in Mesa County. It's burned nearly 30,000 acres near the Colorado-Utah line. Governors declared a state of emergency and authorized the National Guard to help. Our Mark Salinger's there. We'll speak to him in a moment. Outside Leadville, the Willow Fire burned 6 miles from town. It's gone through 1,400 acres of Forest Service land near Turquoise Lake, where campers were hustled out yesterday. The governor said they're preparing for some or all of Leadville to be evacuated today. Beautiful, historic city of about 2,500 people. In southern Colorado, the entire towns of Beulah and Rye are under mandatory evacuation because of the Aspen Acres Fire. That's in Custer and Pueblo counties. It's burned nearly 36 square miles, about the size of the town of Castle Rock. The sheriff's office says they are unable to get after it from the air because the wind is gusting to 100 miles per hour. Firefighters will tell you they don't just fear what's burning now, but what may burn next. 4th of July weekend's coming, a celebration of America and, sadly, displays of human stupidity in the great outdoors.
Conditions are brutal, most extreme conditions we continue to see. So my plea to each and every one of you that's coming to Colorado or anywhere in the West right now is to do your part to reduce the number of ignitions that we have. Reduce the number of times these firefighters have to go out and put their lives on the line to protect lives and property.
As firefighters continue to fight the Snyder Fire, they are simultaneously mourning the loss of their colleagues killed on those same fire lines. Our Mark Salinger joins us now from Fruita. And Mark, you had the opportunity to talk with the chief of a brand new federal agency, which is overseeing those firefighters.
Yeah, Kyle, these federal firefighters can travel all over the country, wherever the wildfires are. But the ones who died here in Fruita are from just down the road in Rifle. They're the first line of duty deaths for a new federal agency that was created just back in January. The U.S. Wildland Fire Service was established 6 months ago to unify wildland fire management under the Department of Interior. And today, all the flags at the Rifle Airport, where the Rifle Helitac team was based, were at half staff. The helicopter that recovered the bodies of the firefighters, as well as rescued the survivors, was still there, waiting for its next mission. The chief of the U.S. Wildland Fire Service flew into Fruita from Boise, where he's based, and I asked him what went through his mind when he heard that the first firefighters in the history of this new agency just lost their lives.
It's just heartbreaking. When we first started to get the word that there'd been a possible entrapment or burnover, and of course I think I speak for all of us here in uniform, we just prayed that that wasn't the case. Once we knew it, we knew there was no question that we would be out here to support the families of the burn injuries, and of course the families and the firefighters out here.
And those two surviving firefighters who were rescued from the burn area were taken to the Anschutz Medical Center in Aurora and are being treated in their burn unit right now. We're told that they have serious injuries. At this time, though, the chief of the fire service says that everybody who's working on this fire, all the firefighters that are out here, Kyle, are going to take some time to have to recover after the flames are put out.
Mark, Colorado has been subject to a lot of retaliation by the federal government, including the withholding of resources over the last year. And there was concern about how that might spill over into fire season.
And that's a huge question. And the governor was here talking about that. Both Colorado U.S. senators were here in Fruita saying we need federal resources if that comes. I mean, they already have the federal resources here with federal firefighters, but if they need federal money to come in after, if things are destroyed, if houses are destroyed, that's a question about whether or not that will happen, because we've seen like the floods perhaps down in the Durango area earlier this year, that there was an ask for federal funds to come in and help the area recover, and the Trump administration denied those.
All right, Mark Salinger in Fruita. Thank you, Mark. Spring and meteorologist Jaden Knowles now. And Jaden, I mean, what, they can't get air support on that fire down near Pueblo and Custer counties because the wind is blowing so strong. What are we going to see in the next 24 hours?
Well, the next 24 hours, Kyle, at least the winds will start to die down at least into the evening hours. But over the next couple of days, we're still talking about gusty conditions. So here's your satellite image of all the wildfires that's continuing. That Willow Fire, as well as the Aspen Acres Fire, that's the new ones that started today. And firefighters are struggling with the one, especially further down towards the south because of these current wind gusts. I mean, up to 40 miles per hour. But as I mentioned, as we head into the evening hours, they should start to die down, but we're still tracking all of the wildfire smoke across the entire air. I mean, especially if you have respiratory issues, you're feeling that, especially if you have asthma. So red flag warning still in effect, but later on in the show, we'll talk more in details if the conditions will at least improve by the time of the holiday this weekend. Kyle?
All right, Jaden, thank you. Colorado's going to be sitting out the red versus blue redistricting war across America if the decision today by the state Supreme Court holds. A unanimous rejection by the justices of Democrats' plans to gerrymander Colorado in time for 2028. The state Supreme Court ruled against five separate ballot proposals, some from Democrats, some Republican countermeasures. These proposals were going to be on the ballot in November, but the redistricting would not have taken effect until the 2028 election cycle. The Supreme Court ruled that the initiatives, which changed the redistricting process and approved new maps, violated the state constitutional requirement that ballot initiatives deal with a single issue. Colorado set up an independent redistricting commission years ago to take the power out of the hands of partisans in the state legislature or even judges and put it instead in the power of groups of citizens to draw what were described as fair maps. That standard will hold through 2023 unless there's a new ruling from the court. The Colorado Democratic Party says that the court's ruling today denies voters the chance to have their say as other states rush to redraw their maps for partisan advantage. Both Democratic candidates for governor, Senator Michael Bennet and Attorney General Phil Weiser, told me today they want Democrats to continue to look for ways within the law to redraw those maps.
Concern that I hear from more progressive Democrats is they feel like you and Phil Weiser don't exactly have bold progressive visions for Colorado, and that's keeping them out of this race at this point. What would you say to that progressive voter?
Well, I'd say that I agree that Phil Weiser doesn't have a bold progressive vision for Colorado. I'm the only candidate in the straight race who said that we should have a public option for health care, who says that we should join states like Washington and California to create a cap and invest program so we're actually managing our climate emissions, and the only candidate in the country who's running on a platform of ensuring that no working person has to spend more than 30% of their income on housing. I think those are bold plans, and I think they distinguish me from my opponent in this race.
I say to that voter, do you want a candidate backed by out-of-state billionaires, corporations, and dark money? Because that's the campaign Michael Bennett's brought to you. Or do you want a candidate who wants to take on Citizens United here in Colorado, do something about who controls our elections? I'm running a people-powered campaign. What you can know as a voter in Colorado is I fight for you.
I hear from a number of folks that think that Democrats who think that both of you would make fine governors and don't really have a concern about the other one being governor, and they're kind of sitting paralyzed, not sure what to do with their ballot. What do you say to that voter?
Well, first of all, make sure you vote. Don't be paralyzed. It's an amazing opportunity as an American, as a Coloradan, to be able to vote, and I hope that everybody does vote. Obviously, I'd love you to vote for me, and what I'd say to you is that I have much broader experience than Phil does. I've worked in the private sector. I've worked as a superintendent of schools, leading an important reform of our education system, and I've spent three terms in the Senate fighting for Colorado at the highest level of our government, protecting 700,000 acres of public land, passing the child tax credit to cut childhood poverty in half in this nation in Colorado. And I think those are the kind of bold moves that we have to make as a state. And frankly, that's why I'm running for governor.
We have to choose. And we have to choose what's best for Colorado. And I got at this in the last answer. And it's really important that people think about it. Michael Bennet will be chair of a committee this fall when the Democrats take the Senate, the Agriculture Committee. Colorado will be well served to have his seniority, his relationships, his expertise. If he were to be governor, unlike me, he doesn't know state government. He's never worked in state government in an executive role, which means he'd have a multi-year learning curve. I'm ready on day one. My answer to those voters is you can have us both. You can have us both in the positions we can do the most good for Colorado.
As Attorney General Phil Wiser and Senator Michael Bennett making their closing pitch to voters, specifically undecided Democratic primary voters, who are likely to determine Colorado's next governor, as Republicans have only succeeded in electing one governor in the state in the last 55 years. You can see both of those full interviews, unedited, on the Next YouTube channel and on 9news.com. There we also talk about what both those men say are the biggest issues that they are hearing about from voters but do not see reflected in the media coverage of the race or the broader conversation. You can get election results anywhere. Join us tomorrow night for the election insight and the analysis that you will not get elsewhere, with key players in Colorado politics joining us live to share their views of what we are witnessing on Colorado's most interesting and impactful primary night since 2010. Our coverage and analysis begins at 6 o'clock with an hour-long edition of Next, then live race results from 7 until 9 p.m. on KTVD and anywhere you stream online. Thank you again for your continuing generosity, 300-plus weeks of microgiving and counting. Most recently, your Word of Thanks microgiving campaign to support the nonprofit Rocky Mountain Equality and their LGBTQ mental health program raised more than $65,000 since last week. That's what you do week after week. That's how you've raised $18 million, going on 7 years' worth of work. Go to wordofthanks.org. You can see an interactive map of all 300-plus campaigns across Colorado. That's also where you can nominate a worthy nonprofit from your corner of the state.
We want to make it much easier for you to park downtown if you want to.
Parking in Denver sucks. The mayor is going to try to unsuck it with the promise of cheap parking. Just make sure you read the fine print. That's next. One of the highlights of going to downtown Denver is circling for parking like a hungry shark in a sea devoid of fish. Denver's mayor hopes to make a splash with a $5 parking plan this summer. Our Angeline McCall asked to see the details.
Downtown Denver may have funding, new development, parking, not so much.
Parking is just ridiculous. That's why I do a lot of walking and e-biking.
Like other Denverites, you might avoid driving downtown.
There aren't enough parking structures, and that's when it gets expensive.
$25 for a couple hours is outrageous. Not that many people can afford that, and ride shares can be even more expensive if you're coming from further away.
Too expensive, not enough parking. Denver Mayor Mike Johnson's heard all the bad reviews.
Yeah, one of the things we've heard so often from people is that they want to come back downtown, but it just feels difficult. It's hard to find parking.
He says starting today, there's a new solution.
Well, then we want to just really start by taking away one complexity of getting to downtown, which is you don't have to worry about parking anymore.
The city is partnering with Spot Hero. In certain private lots, you can park for $5 during weekday evening hours and for 12 hours on Saturday and Sundays. The pilot program continues through September.
And we'll see how it goes. If people like it, they use it, they find it valuable, we'd love to look at ways to extend it.
The program more than doubles the roughly 2,000 metered spots, but for $5 via the Spot Hero app, that number will increase by another 3,000. And for all the bad reviews, so far, this idea is getting some good ones.
I think that sounds like a great solution, especially people coming down for nightlife or Rockies games. Being able to park for a longer period of time for a more affordable rate sounds awesome.
I think it'd be very positive. Oh, yeah. I mean, like I says, I think when I talk to family members, friends, that's one of the reasons they don't come down here.
Positive news, as long as you're not confused. Every lot is not this low rate, just the participating ones in this program with Spot Hero. Those other lots could still charge as much as they want. But if you go through the app, you'll see a $6 rate that goes down to $5 if you put in the code MILEHIGH5 when booking your spot. Kyle.
As always, read the signs, read the signs, read the signs, or you're going to be in trouble. Angeline McCall, thank you very much. Back to meteorologist Jaden Knowles now. And so, Jaden, for all the fires that we have burning in this state, not a lot of smoke in Denver right now.
At least right now. But as we head into the evening hours, we'll really see that smoke start to ramp up all across the metro area. This is a time-lapse video over the weekend as these fires just started across parts of Utah. And you can just see that smoke and just continuing to get thick. So here's your smoke forecast. Noticing heading into the evening hours, especially as we head into Tuesday, I mean, we're going to see that wildfire smoke really start to ramp up across the metro area. And one of the main reasons why we're just seeing just difficult fire conditions is just because we're right in between two storm systems, and that jet stream is right across from us, right over this entire state, I should say. So that's giving us way to some gusty winds out of the southwest, especially the fire that's down towards the southwest in Pueblo. So hopefully we start to see some more conditions of favorable conditions in fighting the fire. These wind gusts will be a little bit better as we head into the evening hours, but you can see ramp right back up as we head into the afternoon for Tuesday. But the rest of my 7-day forecast temperature wise, I mean, let's be positive. Summer temperatures, the 90s, 92 degrees on Thursday, 96 on Friday, 4th of July, 92 degrees. And on Monday, I think that's Jaden's birthday, 91 degrees there.
Happy birthday, Jaden. She's one of America's best chefs, has the hardware to prove it now. She says cool, but that's not why she does it. That's next. A chef in Denver has heard from countless customers, dang, this is fantastic. Well, now she has also heard it from the folks who hand out those James Beard Awards to the best chefs in America. Our Byron Reed caught up with her.
Cooking can be a learning process.
I was always just, you know, a curious cat, wanting to know everything.
For Chef Penelope Wong,
I'm straining out all the aromatics.
It's a lesson that prepared her for the unexpected.
Unbeknownst to me, you know, it was something that my husband and I started up as just kind of a let's do it and see what happens. And it's been different every time. So
Wong is the owner of Yuan Wonton in Denver and recently reached a milestone.
Yeah, I won James Beard Award for Best Chef Mountain Region.
Wong has been a finalist for the award three times before. She started making her award-winning dumplings in a mobile food truck in 2019. Now, she's cooking up tasty treats in a restaurant in Park Hill.
It's foods that mean something to us. It's foods that are delicious to us, and that's just, it's all we want to share.
Wong won the Best Chef category in the Mountain Region, which covers Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Utah, and Wyoming. She's the first Asian woman representing Colorado to win the award.
I mean, it's endearing when I can, you know, help kind of carve the path for other women, for the minority. It's an honor I don't take lightly.
She believes winning this award will bring more recognition to Denver's growing foodie scene.
Definitely within the last decade, it's been really, really fun to see just the growth in diversity and culture in the dining scene.
For Chef Wong, it's proof that sometimes the best recipes aren't learned all at once, but discovered one lesson at a time.
It's continuing the legacy of my family's recipes, which, you know, this is my passion project.
For next.
It's very personal to me.
I'm Byron Reed.
Good luck getting a reservation anytime soon. Svi has feedback. It's coming your way next. Feedback from John. Kyle, why don't you ask Jaden for advice on dressing on television? He's busy with the weather, John. Mark says, why don't you dress as nice as Jaden? I detect a theme in the comments. Here's the deal. If I could pull off a peak lapel double-breasted pinstripe, I would do that. I cannot. He can. Jaden Knowles always looks like $1 million. I look like a crumpled up 20 in your pocket. Suzanne says, I voted too in this primary thanks to your great commentary. This is my commentary last week about why I decided to vote in a party primary for the first time in my life. You can find that on the next YouTube channel. If you haven't voted, get out and do it. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.